They said there's this one thing, it's showing up on our system and it's on all the time and it's never clear exactly which channel it's on. And he was like, I don't know what he's doing. And it was my TiVo that was like going through and it was like scanning and recording my shows back when you would do that kind of thing. And they were like, all right, well, is this forever? And he's like, no, he's leaving soon or whatever. They're like, well, we're gonna turn you off until the TiVo box leaves the household, then we'll turn you back on.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Ted, it's Jim. I'm over here in Lompoc. You in Reseda?
That's right, sir.
All right, and we have another gentleman this week. So, Todd Holmes, where are you coming to us from?
Hey guys. Santa Clarita, California.
Santa Clarita. So we're all on the West Coast this week.
Yes.
And you're originally from Florida, right?
I've kind of moved around a lot. I actually grew up in Pennsylvania, but I lived in Florida for about 15 years and spent a lot of time working in industry and grad school. So I don't know. It almost seems like home to me now.
Okay. You're kind of like a gypsy, I guess, right?
I am kind of, yes.
An academic gypsy.
Academic gypsy. Yes, that is me.
most academics are, I think. Most academics, you know.
We are. We tend to move around because usually we can't find a position at a university nearby where we live. So we usually have to move cross country or something like that for it, typically.
Yeah, chasing tenure.
That's right. Yes. That 5 to 7 year pursuit. Yes.
That's it. So, gentlemen, what do you say we get into our beers and then we'll get deeper into the interview and into the show this week?
Sounds fantastic.
Great. Sounds good.
So Ted, how about you go first and Todd can see how this works.
Okay.
And then I'll pull us in.
So I got Todd and I a beer to this week. So actually this week I was slammed at work. So Handy Market is where I get all my beer, as you know, most of my beer. But this week my wife was running some errands and she ran to Handy Market and she goes, well, how will I know which beer you want for the show this week? And I said, well, we'll FaceTime. You'll FaceTime and we'll look at the beers. And it became one of this kind of a crazy FaceTime experience. I was FaceTiming. Obviously, other people in the store heard that I was FaceTiming and looking at the labels on these beers. And we were asking passerbys what beers they were choosing and why they were picking their beers. So it was a little bit of a scene there in the small corner of Handy Market. But Ann and I settled on these. So it is called New World Ales. That's the brewer. And it is a 2019 A Haze Odyssey. So I know we give a hazy IPAs a hard time, but the rest of it is what sold me. It says double dry hopped hazy evolutionary IPA. So with that said, I like that it said it's kind of a smoother side. Last week I had 100 IBUs. Today, this week it's 35. So that's very smooth.
That's a pale ale minus the India.
Barely. And for it to be dry hopped, you know, doubly dry hopped and yet have like a half IPA, I was interested to see the disposition. I love the Citra hops. I love El Dorado. Amarillo, I don't know. And then a touch of pure mango. Of course, I was having Anne read all the labels to me. So
that's
she had
funny.
All these to me in the store.
Is that a 16?
So let me crack this open here. It's a 16.
Nice.
And I have one of my glasses that I don't think you've seen before, Jimmy. Ah.
No, I haven't seen that one.
Because you said you didn't like my shakers that I kept pouring into. So this is a modified tulip.
Okay.
A tulip? I would call that a tulip, yeah.
Is that what you'd call it?
Looks like it.
Yeah. All right, so here we go.
So you guys have the same beer tonight.
Same beer tonight, yes, yes, the Haze Odyssey.
All right.
Looking forward to trying this. So this is kind of like a New England ale, right? It's, you know, and the fact that it's the hazy hopped. I know that's kind of been
yes.
New England style. At least I think that's where it originated, I believe.
Yeah, maybe. That's a good question. I'm not really sure where that came from.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I do like it. It is very smooth. It is a good IPA. We'll see how it mellows over the course of the pod. Todd, you want to go ahead and...
Yeah, go ahead and crack this open here. Yeah.
Crack yours.
And do that.
There you go.
There we go. Got to do it right in the mic, right?
And we all have cans tonight. No bottles, you know?
No bottles, yeah.
I got to get another Belgian one of these days so I can have that cork pop, you know?
Trying to do this right to the mic here. We get some little ASMR effect here, maybe.
That's it. That's it.
Maybe I can whisper into the mic or something, too.
Of course. Of course.
I don't think your voice is as sexy, though.
How's that beer pouring?
Right. Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. It's not going to have the same effect as the ad, right, that ran at the Super Bowl.
ASMR has nothing to do with sexy, all right, guys? So just so you know. So I've been told.
So I have Saint Archer this week. So if you guys can see it there.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, let me see. Yeah.
It's out of San Diego. It's a 19.2 fluid ounce.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
About a beer and a half, a little more than a beer and a half, and it's a 7%. They don't tell you anything about the IBUs, so I can't tell you what that is, but I'll probably get an idea when I open it and drink it. Again, another IPA, an India Pale Ale.
Mm-hmm.
So nice silver can. It looks like it doesn't have any paint on it, really, other than just the label. So, but let's see what we got. All right. And the glass I have is actually a Dogfish Head styled like IPA glass here.
Oh, nice.
Mm. So that's an interesting size. I was looking at different can sizes for our canning line because I know I want Jimmy to do a canned self.
Yeah.
And that's that super tall, skinny one. It's a little narrower.
Is it narrow? I don't know. No, I think it's the same thing. It's just tall.
It's just taller.
Yeah.
Taller than our pint.
So Todd, have you had a taste of yours?
Yes, I have. It's really good. I like it. I can definitely taste the mango in there a little bit. Definitely. It does not have a lot of bitterness or anything. It's definitely you can taste the fruitiness of it for sure. It's smooth.
Yeah, this one is mild and smooth, not very dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, overall, this one's good, too. I mean, it's really, it's light in flavor. I wasn't sure what to expect.
And yours is clear, right?
Yeah, it's not hazy, but they don't give you much description on the can, so I didn't know what to expect. Yeah, I like it. Overall, it's not too hop forward, but then it kind of settles out nice on the back end.
Oh, good.
All right, boys, enjoy your beers.
Awesome.
Man, it's going to be hard for me. Todd and Ted. As I'm doing my show notes, I started spelling Ted's name with two D's.
Todd, that's so funny. That's actually, you know, my brother's name is Ted, and my mom originally spelled my name Todd with just T-O-D, and she changed to two D's, though, after about 10 days, because she realized it's going to be too big of an issue throughout our lives. Todd and Ted with that middle letter.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. So you are assistant professor at Cal State Northridge, right?
Yes.
In media marketing, is that what it is? Or give us some definition of that.
Yeah, no problem. It's technically media management. Essentially, what I focus on is pretty much everything outside of actual content creation. And we know that, of course, you know, content is king. That's always the most important thing. But however, if you don't have great marketing, if you don't pay attention to the financial part and make sure that it makes sense from that standpoint, then you're not going to get very far. So the kind of classes I teach are like, I teach a general media management class, which kind of goes over, you know, it starts, you know, theories of management, but then I get into distribution, marketing, the financial part, a little bit on and the legal part and regulation. I teach that. I teach media research methods, which is all about how to conduct qualitative and quantitative research. And of course, being a professor, I have to do a lot of research and that kind of thing. So I teach that. I teach a class on network strategy, basically looking at the major broadcast networks, a little bit the cable networks as well, and considering certainly the streaming providers, Netflix and Hulu, and how they go about strategizing. And also I've taught audience analysis too, kind of all about, you know, ratings and shares, but then also a lot of the digital metrics now that we're using that, you know, that aren't completely defined across the industry, but that, you know, there's a bunch of different ones there.
Wow, that's pretty verse.
It's a wide spectrum of media marketing, huh?
It is, yes. And media marketing is kind of my favorite topic because my background is more on the marketing side. And actually, I want to at some point introduce a specific class in media marketing, but we haven't gotten to that yet. So I haven't been, you know, I've only been at Cal State Northridge. I started in fall of 17, so still fairly new there.
Yeah, and Ted and I are both alums of CSUN, at least for graduate school.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yes. I went to the Sang College for my MBA.
Oh, great.
And you, Jimmy, what you got there?
The Michael D. Eisner College of Education. Yeah, I'm a school psychologist.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
And my day job, that is.
Your day job, that is. Okay. Now, you guys, now how do you guys know each other originally? Did you know each other like going way back, or was it around the time of at CSUN? Or?
Ted lives across the street from my in-laws.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, all right. You know.
Okay. Okay. So when the in-laws kick him out, you see him in the front yard?
You know, natural. It's very natural.
Yeah. I mean, so it's like one day they moved in and remodeled their house and we invited them to our wedding. And it's been like, I don't know, we've known them since.
Okay. Oh, great.
I mean, you guys moved in, what, 2004? Is that one?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
We moved in 2004 and, you know, I wouldn't call it a sleepy town, but it is a small town, Reseda outside of LA. It's, you know, I think it's still part of LA.
Yeah, technically it is.
When I first moved here, they said it's LA, but when I called LADWP, they're like, just say Reseda. Everybody's going to get weirded out if you say that you're LA. And I'm like, but officially on the map, it says LA. And they're like, don't worry about that. It's just unincorporated, but it's right next to Reseda and Encino. So you got to just go with what you have there. So, but within a week of us moving in, we heard a knock on the door and Frank, Jimmy's father-in-law, was at the front door, welcoming us to the neighborhood.
Oh, cool.
Very old school. It was amazing. And as the kids grew up, they were the grandparents that were very local right across the street. So it was an amazing, great family experience have. So when Clarissa and Jimmy got together, it was a no-brainer to extend our friendships.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah, and my wife and I've been dating, well, and now married, but we started dating in 2003 and they moved in 2004, so it was only like a year later, I guess, than we've known each other since. Yeah, so what, 15 years or something now, or whatever it is, right? Man, it's like forever, it seems.
Yeah.
Oh. That's really cool.
And the podcasting thing was the first harebrained idea that I got Jimmy to sign off on. I've been bouncing, you know, crazy startup ideas off him for the past 10 years. He just shoots them down with logic and you know, money concerns. And then the podcasting got through because we, over the course of a weekend, we ordered microphones and got rolling the next week. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. To move pretty fast then.
Yeah. Well, it was one of those things where the microphones weren't very expensive. You know, I mean, or let me put it this way. The buy-in to podcasting isn't too bad. We've spent a little bit since on software and stuff. But overall, though, we got a website then and, you know, we have that hosting and everything. But, you know, the skin in the game's not too steep. And then it's one of those things where if you're going to do it, you're just going to do it. And I don't know if Ted realized how quickly this was going to take place. But I said, Ted, give me a sound check. And he's like, okay. I'm like, all right, let's record like an intro and then we'll do an episode. And we had no clue what we were doing, and those early ones are just painful to listen to.
Don't go back too far.
don't go back too far. Yeah.
Yeah, they're painful, but I think that's probably holds true for most people who podcast. You go back to like your first or second episode, and if you don't have any experience with radio or anything, like, yeah, you don't know what you're doing, you know, and then it just kind of evolves into what we have now. And now we're getting guests on like yourself, right? And, you know, other interviews and just people joining us for fun stuff, you know, I mean, and it's kind of turning out to be a fun thing.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, I've been listening to you guys, you know, about the last four or five podcasts, though. You guys do a great job. I'm impressed. I'm honored to have the opportunity to join you guys. So.
Thank you.
Took a while to get the sound good, but we got the sound good. So yeah, I was hammering Ted with the sound and he's like, you think people care? I'm like, yeah, they care.
Yeah, they care.
And then our first 20 compliments were all right, about the right. Sound, how good it
okay.
sounds.
So. No, it sounds really good. It's really clear. It's really clear. And you guys have been doing this for a while because this is episode 65, right? Or something like that.
That's right.
Yeah, we go weekly every Thursday.
Okay.
So over a year we've been doing it.
Great.
Let's do a little bit of our week. I want to offer up Jimmy happy birthday. Yesterday was your birthday.
That's true.
Congratulations on another year. And how was your week?
Week was a bit long. I'm kind of tired tonight. You know, usually I'm more energetic. I feel, but no, it was a good week. overall. I mean, yeah, birthday week. We went to, or we watched Iron Man 3 last night. I wanted to watch the Theranos Extended 2020 on ABC because I know Ted was into that, or he's into that, and I'm into that. And we live in the shadow of this mountain, so we can't get ABC over the air. And we don't subscribe to cable. So I was just going to stream it. And of course, with a maybe... Todd, you can shed light on this. I don't know. But of course, with licensing or whatever it is, like ABC doesn't stream to my geographic location. You know, I'm just like, what?
Oh, right, right.
So I'm like, well, I'll just stream this other one, W something or whatever, which is on the other side of the Mississippi. And I have like Jimmy Kimmel Live. I'm like, well, it's already 11 o'clock there or whatever. So it ain't, yeah, it's not playing. So we did Iron Man 3 instead. And I was lost in that too, because I kept nodding in and out. So that's been about my week. So nothing really terribly exciting. So how about you, Ted?
This week, well, I'll mix it a little bit with what we're watching. I saw Captain Marvel this week, last weekend, and it was amazing. It was my favorite thus far of all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I was very happy that the family, you and I, have watched all these movies. Obviously, like I said, my family did it a little more accelerated than yours, or the once a week. We were watching three to four movies a week. And it was amazing culmination of work. I was telling some friends that over the past few Marvel movies, Black Panther, Infinity War, they've given the villains like this grain of truth element to them. And that's been really nice. But this was a great way to turn that on its head and to go back to giving the hero the focus and the true statement of the movie. And then to have Captain Marvel, I don't know, you guys care about spoilers? We'll do a little spoiler thing here.
No, go ahead.
Let's save the spoiler to the end so you don't alienate like most of our audience who might not have seen it.
Do you want to save the spoiler till the end? Or I could do the spoiler and we could say skip ahead 30 seconds and I'll just make sure I'll watch the clock and then we could do it like that.
Okay, sure. Go for it. If you have to give a spoiler, then go for it.
All right. No, it's a light spoiler. So if you haven't seen Captain Marvel and you care about spoilers, I will do a 30-second spoiler and you can skip 30 seconds and you'll miss the whole spoiler. My favorite thing about Captain Marvel was she has a choice of being able to vanquish her enemy, but she doesn't. She says she has nothing to prove to him. And to me, that's such a powerful statement, because where we live in the world today is literally about fighting ideas. So wars are fought over ideas, and to kill an idea, you have to not kill your enemy. And I think it's just a very heavy, heady place for a Marvel movie to go, and for that to be the main message, and for it to still make 150 million plus in opening weekend domestically was amazing.
With the 150 million plus in the opening weekend, probably no one's going to be spoiled, and everybody's already seen it. Well, that's true.
You two haven't seen it, so...
That's true. And Todd, how was your week?
My week was good. Pretty much the highlights of my week is, well, one, my mother is here visiting from Texas for a couple of weeks. So,
oh, okay.
So it's been nice to have her here. And we took her out to dinner last night, Salt Creek Grill there at Valencia Town Center. So it was good to get out a little bit. And then kind of the highlight of the week was really, this is going to sound like a real nerd here, but was getting my I was working on a research project with a colleague from another university looking at online mobile apps. We created a mobile app and we had ads. It was basically a test of different ads placed in different positions relative to an article. And there were video ads, there were animated ads, and there were still banner ads. And we were kind of doing the test there. But anyway, our goal was 200 participants. We got to about 100 or 220. So that was an accomplishment there. So we were happy about that. In terms of films, actually, the other night watched with mom, and I had not seen it yet, Black Klansman. That was an interesting flick. So I had not seen that.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, we did talk about that a while back.
Did you? Okay. Yeah, it was pretty interesting. I have not seen Captain Marvel yet, though. So I've got to see that. I'm not part of that massive going there that first weekend. So
right.
Got to see it.
Yeah, let me back up one second, too. So yesterday, I showed my boys Star Wars for the first time. And the Star Wars that I showed him was the original theatrical release from 1977.
How did you get that one? Was it VHS?
No, it's a DVD, but I bought it like, I hunted it down and found it. And it's like a bonus disc and like another disc type thing. Everything about it is great, except the sound's like 2.0. So the sound's a little bit not the best. But all day today, then they're playing, like, they have their capes on. What, you know, they're like Darth Vader, you know, and they have like little Tinker Toy things, and one's orange and one's blue, and they're sitting there like with lightsabers and stuff. I mean, all day they're playing Star Wars, you know, and it's like, man, that movie just lends itself for kids to play it.
That's awesome.
for the past like half century, you know, whenever, or since it's been out, whatever, not, maybe not that long, but yeah, it was just, and they loved it, man. It was great. I mean, they were just totally into it. I didn't know what to expect. You know, it's like, it's not animated, you know, they're little kids.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not animated, and they just loved it. I mean, they thought it was the coolest thing. And my youngest one, Mikey, he says his favorite character is Darth Vader because he chokes people. I'm like, well, just don't choke me, whatever you do, you know?
Whatever you do, right. Well, that's great. Now, how old are your kids?
4 and 6.
4 and 6. Okay. Okay. Well, that's great. You know, well, I'll say, you know, for me, I mean, Star Wars had a major impact on me as a kid. I was, you know, I saw it the first time. I was 4 years old, and I was, I had all the action figures and all the, I still have them actually stored away with family in Texas.
That's funny. Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. No, it is. I haven't watched, though, the original theatrical version in a while. I've got that on VHS. I don't have it on DVD or anything.
Yeah, and throughout the time, I mean, even when it came to VHS, there were subtle changes and stuff. And there's like a whole wiki page on Wikipedia that tells you every edition and all the changes in the edition. I mean, it's like this one leap, right? The theatrical release in 77 to the remake in, what, 93 or whatever it was. And when they just vomited everything onto the screen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's totally offensive. But there's little subtle changes as different releases, like even when it came to Laserdisc or VHS and all this stuff, they made changes to it and everything. It's like incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember hearing a quote one time, George Lucas said, "There's only one Star Wars, and when I'm finished, that'll be the one." Right. You know, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but
until I tinker with it again and re-release it
until I completely ruin the entire thing until I completely destroy everyone's childhood. Right. Anyway, before we get down that rabbit hole. So, Todd, you kind of got into entertainment media management and everything, but is there like a specific definition of what it is, or what, like, or is it kind of just the non-production side of the industry?
Well, it's essentially, you know, applying management theory, management practices to the media industry. And, you know, of course, the media industry has some things that are unique about it. I mean, one being the fact that you're trying to cater to an audience, but you're also trying to cater to advertisers, and then trying to balance out those. And of course, ideally, what you do, of course, hopefully you make the audience happy, you have strong ratings, and therefore you can get a lot of advertising revenue in return. But, you know, that's a lot of really what it's about. I mean, it could include some aspects of production, but the focus of it, though, tends to be more on the marketing side, on the distribution side, on the monetary side too. I mean, involving with content creation, looking at the expenses involved with content creation, and thinking about certainly licensing fees and network contracts and things like that, certainly being part of it. But yeah, there's a lot of focus on, like I said, the management or the marketing side and distribution sides.
Mm.
I think the distribution side is what really piques my interest, because that is the thing, when you talk about the industry being disrupted, the distribution is the part of the industry that feels like it has changed because of Netflix and other streaming services entrance into the market. But it feels like, to me, as somebody who's been in media marketing professionally for the past 12 plus years, that it doesn't feel like it's going to go back to the MVPD model. The cable companies, as we know them today, as they start to collapse on themselves a little bit, I don't see the bundling of channels and networks the way that it has has been in the past, going back to a city, the way that it was.
Will you define MVPD model?
Todd, hit me up with the. I mean, it's a cable company, but what does it stand for?
Yeah, it stands for multi-channel video program distributor. So it's.
Oh, okay, got it.
That's the official, yeah. So it's cable companies, it's satellite companies, it's any company that packages a lot of channels together,
sure,
and then people pay a subscription for.
So your big ones before were DirecTV and Comcast.
Right, DirecTV, Comcast.
But as DirecTV started buying production companies and Comcast bought NBC, and Cox is another big one, but as they bought production companies and as they started being more involved in production, it was clear that they too were straying from the model of pure distribution.
Right, yeah, definitely. It's a big thing now with all the cable companies to have their own content, to have their own news and have a dedicated channel to that. And so we have Spectrum Cable where I am. And of course, the lowest channel tier that you have, or the lowest channel, is their news, Spectrum News here. So it's that's a big thing for them to try to promote their unique content. And I agree with you, though. I don't see it really. The power that those MVPDs have had, the cable companies, satellite companies, is definitely starting to erode as more people are, cutting the cable and they're seeing the advantages. Just certainly that direct-to-consumer model that we have with Netflix and we have with Hulu and with Amazon Prime. And I think, that's...
Even HBO's going that route.
Right. Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's... HBO's going that route. Even some of the major networks, CBS, they've got CBS All Access. They're going after a slightly different demographic, too, with their streaming service. So, I don't know. There's some people that think, though, what might happen to all the different streaming providers, that at some point, then you might have companies that might go into bundling those together and providing sort of a, that kind of option. But I don't know. It's not sure. I don't know. Ted, do you think that's a possibility?
I think the groupthink of executives within the industry say, oh, we'll get back to a place of bundling. You'll notice that people are talking about skinny bundles.
Right.
And skinny bundles is just any bundle that's going to price you sub $50. They like that $20 to $50 bundle of channels with a bit more of an a la carte feel. So you get to choose like 20 channels that you watch instead of getting 150 channels, and you don't get a lot of choice in those 150. But I will say that my professional opinion of why that won't happen is the way that when Netflix turned off their API, when Netflix started, they had an API where you could link in an API. I don't even know what API stands for, but it's
like the interface. Yeah.
It's a computer interface.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's an interface where if you have a product or an app or something, you can plug in to another app or another community like Netflix, and you can, plug into some of the data they have. So they really created a black box where they are in complete control of their environment and what's going on there. And they have so many subscribers. And with that being said, we listen to a lot of The Exponent here. The Exponent is another podcast that really informs my thought process on how this media is going to develop, because he talks a lot about just technology developing. And to me, Netflix, when we talked about The Irishman last week or a couple weeks ago, the Irishman is like the Kirkland brand Goodfellas.
Okay.
If you want to think about Netflix as Costco, you take Netflix as Costco and imagine if Costco was told by all their suppliers, next in 2020, we're going to pull all of our stuff off your shelves. Well, what's Costco to be left at? It'll be left as Kirkland brand store. You know what I mean? And people will still go there because Kirkland is a high quality brand. It's made on the same production lines as all the other things, as all the other products. Tide is made in the same place where Kirkland is made. I mean, that's just an example. I don't know if that's the exact example, is that truth, but they use production lines for the high-end brands and they release the product at a discounted price because it is their private label. So I feel like that this is the new definition of what I'm going out as. And it's so funny, I was driving downtown and we're passing the Netflix building and I was listening to Exponent with my son in the back, and he's 10 years old. He's nine. Okay, he's turning 10. But I threw him my notebook and I was like, I can't drive and write. I have to dictate to you. So I dictate. I dictated the Costco model. I have the notes for this Costco model of Netflix written in his handwriting.
That's so amazing.
That's funny.
So Todd, what we're talking about, it seems like models of distribution and things are moving so rapidly and quickly. So when you have a freshman who comes in, I mean, whatever the age, 18, 19, 30.
Right.
You know, but you have somebody who comes into to start their academic education or their academic career, let's say, in media management, content marketing, all this stuff, and they graduate in 4 or 5 years later with a bachelor's degree. How much or how relevant is their education when things move at such a rapid clip? Do you know what I'm getting at?
Oh, I know what you're getting at. Yeah, and there's no doubt that this industry moves very rapidly, and what is true today and some of the industry practices are going to be completely changed, completely different in, you're right, 5 or 6 years. The way we look at it, though, there are some fundamentals, though, certainly of management, some fundamentals of how the media industry, at least, has been, you know, set up in current trends that aren't going to change necessarily in 5 years. So there is some of that. But then at the same time, though, a lot of what we're trying to do as well is just try to educate students on, you know, what some of the major issues are and then help them figure out how to problem solve. And, you know, we feel that, you know, if they can know how to problem solve, then, you know, and hopefully then they're going to keep up with industry trends. And we certainly, one thing I try to do in my classes is have students actually find articles and bring those in and discuss those and present those to the class, things out of the trade press that they might bring in from, you know, Variety, Hollywood Reporter, Broadcasting and Cable, you know, LA Times, things like that. But a lot of what, you know, again, we try to instill is, okay, here's kind of the fundamentals and here's some of the major trends that we don't see necessarily shifting too quickly. And here are different ways we're going to help you learn how to problem solve. And we do a lot through case studies. In my management class, we have a series of case study assignments that they do every week, and they do a major assignment at the end of the semester. But the case study scenarios seem to work pretty well because, again, it's all about the way they're written is they're not so much confined by time that actually a lot of the scenarios are what is true now would still be true in 5 years. And even though the technology's changed and maybe some things have potentially changed, but a lot of the fundamentals are still there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so you're just focusing on like the bones of, like you're giving them good bones and then they just add all the meat later. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
It's up to them to do the workout.
Exactly. And we'll talk. And of course, I always try to emphasize that, you know, the importance that even though they're going to have this degree, they're going to have this piece of paper that, you know, says that, okay, they've completed all these requirements, though, that the idea of lifelong learning is there and just have the mindset of, hey, you're always, if you, you know, really want to make it in this field, you're always going to be a student of media and you've got to continue to learn the latest, greatest things. But I do try to talk about, you know, some fundamentals of management. Talk about, you know, trends like consolidation and things like that, which at least I don't see changing in the foreseeable future. You know, as we go from 6 major conglomerates really now down to 5 now with Disney and Fox converging. So those are the kind of things, again, that I talk about. But I always try to emphasize, yeah, that these, a lot of what you're going to learn now, there are a lot of the things that are going to change. And who knows, Netflix is dominant now in streaming, but who knows 5 or 6 years from now, for instance, are they going to still maintain that position? And then what's going to happen with cable companies? And
right, yeah.
So, yeah, I try to give them the bones and, yeah, let them kind of bite into the meat then on their own, I suppose.
Yeah. You know, another question too. So you have kids coming in from what, high school? I mean, is that your typical student or are there people coming in second or third careers later in life? What's your typical student look like?
You know, a typical student is, a lot of them have come in from junior colleges, a lot of them. And when I see them, typically I'm teaching more of the upper level, the 300-400 level classes.
Okay.
So most of them are juniors by the time you get to me. And some have been at CSUN all the way through, but it seems like about half of my students though have gone to a 2-year college or they've transferred over from another 4-year when they get to me. Now there are some non-traditional students. I usually in every class, typically my classes are about 30 students. I usually have about 3 or so that are non-traditional.
They're the best students.
No, they.
That's
they,
how I started.
They are, right? There you go. You know,
I waited 7 years before I went to for my undergrad. So
okay, well, you know what? I mean, I will say that the older students, though, they do seem a little. I think they just value their education a little bit more, and they make more of an effort to get to know me as a professor. And they do tend to get some of the better grades. They tend to perform a little better.
Yeah, because I started at 29 myself, you know, and so I was definitely later in life too.
Okay.
You know, the other thing we were talking about too is how, you know, how media has changed over time, and some of your research research was like the media habits or the consumption habits of students. Is that what it was?
It's called Changing Media Perceptions and Consumption Habits.
Oh, there you go.
I have the white paper right in front of me. It's amazing.
Well, thank you.
Ted, amazing, it's in front of you. I thought you would have had it memorized by now.
No, I redlined all of it. I've circled all this stuff for, you know, it's amazing.
Okay. No problem. Well, hopefully you found it enlightening, if that's the right word to use. but yeah, no, that study was something we did with when I was at the University of Florida getting my PhD. One of my professors had mentioned that they had just worked out a deal with Nielsen to do this 4-year study. They were looking for a project manager. So I thought it'd be a good experience. So I volunteered and I had the professor for another class, and I volunteered to do this. And little did I know that I essentially was hired on, because I was working on my dissertation and doing my PhD, some classes and everything too. And little did I know that it originally was kind of sold to me as, oh, it'll be like a halftime a week or 20-hour a week type of job. But there were times where I probably put in 40 to 50 hours at least on it at a week. So,
Oh, man.
Mainly writing these reports. I mean, Ted, what I sent you was just, I have about 20 reports about like that I had.
Well, thank you for sparing me, because this is a lot to get through, but I
oh,
do
yeah, no
appreciate
problem.
It.
So essentially our study was looking at how media habits of college students would change over the 4 years. And what we did is we recruited students in 2012 to be part of a panel. We wanted to get 150 students, which we did. They were going to then stay on for 4 years, and the students were going to complete surveys. They were going to, some of them were going to be called in for focus group sessions, which we did 3 of those a year, 12 total over 4 years. We also did kind of a video diaries, and I actually have a short video that sort of like I can send you guys later if you wanted to see, but where we did, we basically followed like 4 kids around a year with a camera for a day and kind of did a day in the life sort of thing with them. And of course, some of it was staged, but most of it was us, you know, getting them, you know, authentic moments of them. We had to get certainly permission though to follow them into classrooms and film and stuff there and film places on campus. But you know, we gave them $100 and they were pretty happy with that to let us follow them around, stalk them for a day. So
I'd take $100 in college.
And what was your attrition rate?
We did pretty well with it. Well, we start off with 150, and then by the last year, we still had about 100 or so participants. So we did lose some.
And do you see, like, so you're doing it with college students over a 4-year period. Do you see, like, parallels with maybe same age peers going into the military or in the workforce, skipping college altogether? I mean, is it more of like an age group thing? Not to have you defend your dissertation yet again, but but like, how did you parse out like college versus, you know, non-college, and did you even do that stuff?
No, that's a good point. You know, we didn't really parse that out so much. I mean, what I can say is I believe that some of the trends though would be the same though, even for non-college students or student, you know, people going to the military and choosing other routes.
Just more their age group.
I think it's more of the age group. However, I will say that at least some research that I've done shows that, you know, college students though are especially quick to adopt new innovations and things like that.
Early adopters, yeah.
Early adopters, yeah, that's the word. So there is some research to kind of back that up. And they tend to be pretty tech savvy, and they tend to be pretty confident with technology. And also, you know, they're usually strapped financially, so they're very creative and finding content as cheaply as possible and all of that too. So that kind of adds to their ability to find innovative ways to find content and all of that.
Yeah. And did it matter? Like, did you go across various majors and things? So computer science to psychology to, you know, education, you know what I mean?
Yes, we sure did. That was, Jimmy, that was a big thing we tried to do, is because Nielsen was very adamant about having as diverse of a population as we could. You know, of course, they're very scientific, and of course, how they do their TV ratings and all that. So we had expectations there. So yeah, we had a very broad cross-section. That was early part of the project, was I had to go out to classrooms, make announcements, and we had a pretty broad cross-section. We had a lot of majors that were, a lot of business majors. We had a lot of education majors. We had a fair number of liberal arts and science majors. I was in the journalism communication college. We had a number of our majors there. It was pretty diverse, really. Engineering,
Yeah, because if you just have like nothing but computer science, well, of course they're doing VPNs and all this stuff, right?
Right, exactly, exactly. Or if we had like journalism communication majors, you know, like we didn't want to. Yeah, so it was pretty broad. And that was a thing that was really, you know, important to Nielsen. And even in our focus groups, we tried to bring in a diverse population. I mean, we kind of did questionnaires there and we try to have a nice balance between male, female. We try to bring in people of different ethnicities, different majors. We try to have some diversity there. That was a little trickier though too, because of course that was you're asking students to come in for an hour and a half, 2 hours. But again, we gave them like $30 gift card, Visa gift card for an hour and a half, two hours at a time. So they definitely got something out of it.
Yeah, well, that's cool. That's cool.
I have a funny Nielsen story. My dad was a Nielsen household, and when right before we moved out here, we stayed with him for a couple months. And when we stayed with him, I brought my TiVo box.
You threw all the data. You ruined the whole thing.
Well, I did, because I was like, they said, there's this one thing. It's showing up on our system and it's on all the time. And it's never clear exactly which channel it's on. And he was like, I don't know what he's doing. And it was my TiVo that was like going through and it was like scanning and recording my shows back when you would do that kind of thing. And they were like, all right, well, is this forever? And he's like, no, he's leaving soon or whatever. They're like, well, we're going to turn you off until until the TiVo box leaves the household. Then we'll turn you back on.
How do you become a Nielsen household?
It's pretty random, right, Todd?
It's very random. Yeah, they put a lot of science into it, and they really try to see within a particular geographic area, you know, what are the demographics where they're not reaching as many people, and they try to kind of do it randomly. And they go, you know, I'm not sure all the details of it, but I know that they sort of then look at zip codes, and then they from zip codes and they look at neighborhoods, and they try to make a very random approach to get a very random sample if possible. But there are times where they do target specific demographics and all that. So they like sometimes they have a tough time getting particularly young men, for instance. Sometimes they'll specifically go after young men, or they're maybe low in a certain area, maybe of a certain ethnicity, maybe African American or something. So they might focus in on African American families. But then they try to do that randomly though within those demographics. But they put a lot of science into it.
Yeah, and they just knock on the door and say, like, do you want to, like, would you mind if we watch what you watch?
Well, essentially, usually what they do is they send out an introductory letter and then saying that we'd like to have you as a household. And usually they give you a questionnaire and they slide in $2 and they say, hey, if you send us back. Then after that, typically, then they'll have somebody show up at your doorstep.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because I think the main question they ask is, are you in the entertainment industry? Because they don't want you. Because you'll skew their data like crazy.
You will.
That's hilarious.
No, that's so true, because I was contacted once for Arbitron, you know, used to do where they were acquired by Nielsen, used to do radio. And at the time I was working for radio. So yeah, as soon as I mentioned that I was working at radio at the time, that was it. They were like, no, we're good. Right.
They hang up the phone.
So nowadays, I mean, with the OTT and, you know, all the stuff that we're doing, whether it's, you know, I mean, on your phone, like phone casting over to your TV and all this crazy stuff that goes on now, right? So you don't have a box anymore. And I mean, how many people are watching TV in real time? You know, the way, like, if you think back, like when we were kids or whatever, it's like, and there's an event, everybody's in front of the TV, because if you weren't, it didn't happen. So how do they collect data nowadays when with so many different, like, I mean, there's hundreds of way to get the same content.
Well, that's one thing change that they made is, you know, that they measure live viewing. Then they also do live plus same day, live plus 3 day, live plus 7 days.
Oh, okay.
So they try to account for DVRs.
Live plus seven. Live plus seven is my sweet spot. I love the live plus seven.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's essentially, they'll measure that. Of course, the advertisers, I mean, they want to see that. They want all the data they can get. And yeah, so that's kind of how they're breaking it down now. And of course, they have to keep adjusting their numbers up. But it's interesting how they do it. You know, it's how they have these people meters and households where everyone in the house has they have a remote, and you basically, you know, have the black box of the TV, and then every person in the household has a different number assigned to them. So maybe dad has number one. So whenever he sits down to watch TV by himself, he hits the number one. So they know that it's him watching, and then mom is maybe number two, and then maybe they have a couple kids or three and four, and then they each have a different button they have to press before they watch content. So that's kind of how they do figure out the demographics and everything too. They call those people meters. years.
Yeah, and then you get a, and then you get like a snarky kid who hits like, you know, two when he's actually four and.
Right, exactly. So it's definitely not a not a perfect system. There's no
right,
doubt.
Right.
Do they still do the journaling?
You know, they actually just got rid of that. They,
journaling?
They retired that in in May of last year. They were, yeah, they're actually going to an automated process now, even in small markets. But in the smaller markets like Market 75 or Market 100 Plus, that they were still using diaries until May of last year.
Wow.
So
they would give you like a tablet. They'd give you a paper and they'd give you like a book and you'd have to like turn it in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you'd have to log your viewing for the entire week. And of course, the way it works, of course, you know, human nature, people probably do a pretty good job on it early in the week, you know, Monday, Tuesday, but then they get later in the week, then they're then it's like Saturday and they're trying to think about what was I watching on Wednesday, what was that, or they
oh, that's the reading log for kindergarten, man. Right, yeah. You know, and then I start making it up. I'm like, I don't know, I think we read this day.
We saw, I actually had a I had an opportunity to go to Nielsen, their headquarters in Tampa, Florida. And they actually, yeah, and then they actually hire a lot of retirees to come in. Of course, there's a lot of retirees in Florida to come in. And one of the jobs that they give them is deciphering those books, because people write in one network and they write in a different program that doesn't air on that network. And they're to try to figure out the discrepancies and decide.
Oh my God.
Oh man. Yeah.
Okay. Which one is it?
You know? Human nature, you know?
Oh, it's crazy.
Exactly.
And then do people get paid to do all this work?
Typically, yes, they do. What Nielsen does is they, yeah, if you're going to have this black box in your room and you're going to have to hit these different buttons, a people meter, or they have another one just called a regular meter that doesn't have the buttons on it, but they actually, yeah, they'll pay you a certain amount of money every month. I don't know exactly what it is, but depending on how desirable your household is or how hard it is to reach a household with your type of demographics, is the more money they're going to give you.
And last question about it. I know, because, you know, but it's so like interesting, but I don't want to like just dedicate the whole show to Nielsen ratings.
Yeah, no problem. I'm not a Nielsen representative, but yeah.
If you're a Nielsen household, is it like confidential, or can you tell your like neighbors, hey, guess what, everybody, I'm a Nielsen house?
Well, I'm not sure technically if that's a problem or not. I've had people that have told me they're a Nielsen house, and I've asked in the class. I don't come across it very often, but I've asked every semester. I ask students in every class, "Hey, have you or your parents ever been a Nielsen household?" And every once in a while, but every two or three semesters, I get one student, so it doesn't happen very often.
Oh wow, that's more than I would ever, because I've never heard of anybody who's a Nielsen other than Ted's dad.
I don't know many people. I think I only know maybe one person personally.
Yeah.
That's been a Nielsen household. Like I said, there's been a few students over the years, but not many.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's pretty cool how, you know, like this, the data collection on what we watch and how it works, you know, it's pretty fascinating.
No, it really is. And one thing will be interesting to see too, is they're moving toward trying to understand mobile viewing more. I mean, one thing they're doing with radio is they have, you may have heard about this, but they have these small devices, kind of like pager devices that people wear around, and no matter where you go in somewhere, you know, a restaurant, and they have a certain channel on that actually picks up that signal, knows what is actually on there. Or if you go to your office,
nice.
And another TV set's on. And so that's something they're trying. I mean, it's primarily been done in radio, but they want to start doing it in TV because they, you know, there's a lot of misviewing out there. I mean, it's certainly, if you think about something like big, like the Super Bowl, for instance, of course, many times, of course, people are going to Super Bowl parties and they're going. So in that particular case, if you're a Nielsen household and you're watching at your buddy's house, well, you're not being counted for that.
You're not logging it.
Logging it, yeah.
The numbers, so many millions of American watch this one show opening night or what, you know, you hear these little details, you know, in the news and so on. Aside from the gee whiz, what do they use the data for? Is it for marketing and advertising?
Yes, it's really for the advertisers more than anything. And it, you know, it's for the networks and the different, you know, the local stations and all that, certainly as well. And they pay a fair amount of money to have access to that information. Of course, that's how they're they're selling to advertisers, but it's real big for the ad agencies and things, and even the different demographic categories and things like that. A lot of that comes from the early days of advertising and when advertising agencies, when those really blossomed, you know, back in the mid to late 20th century, you know, a lot of that comes from that time. But it really is, it's a combination of the advertisers, a combination of the media outlets, the local stations, as well as the national networks and things.
Wow. Okay.
Certainly content creators too. I mean, of course they want to know, you know, their new programs, obviously, are they going to make it or not? So
yeah. Yeah.
Along those lines, do you deal with TRPs and GRPs?
A little bit. Yes.
What's a TRP or GRP?
So, so what we started getting into is their gross rating points
and target rating points.
TRP. It's like
which are demographic points. Demographically based.
So it's like if you are targeting an audience, then you want to know your TRPs versus your overall GRPs. But basically, Nielsen, it multiplies the number of actual count that they have, right? And each one of those Nielsen households represents what, 100,000 people or something?
Yeah, I think that's about right. Something like that. Yeah.
Is that something like that? Something like that? Yeah. The numbers are off, but they have a calculation where they deal with like the census, and I'm sure every time the census comes out, Nielsen goes crazy and they're like, oh, this is what we need. We need to match this demographically and geographically. And
exactly, they're scrambling.
And who is Nielsen? Is he the first guy to ever do this or something?
Yeah, he was early on, not the earliest. There were a couple of services before that. I think there was the Hooper ratings were some of the very early ones back from like the 1930s, I think. That was mainly a first radio phenomena, and then there are a couple other ones, but then AC Nielsen came along and they became, you know, the dominant player in television, and they and then Arbitron did radio, and then it was the two of them pretty much doing it all. And then Nielsen then in 2013 acquired Arbitron, and they became one company. So you really just have that one big measurement company.
Wow.
And yeah, that's involved. So, well, you have them, but you also do have Comscore. Comscore does internet ratings and things like that, focuses there. And of course, with so much content shifting online, it's thought that, you know, Comscore is able to really start competing more with Nielsen. And I think as time goes on, even will become even more and more relevant.
It looks like an acquisition play for
right
for Nielsen. Nielsen's like eyeing them and licking their
exactly.
chops.
So, gentlemen, as interesting as this is, shall we get into what it feels like to be a trailer junkie?
Well, I want to first say that this is another first for Trailer Junkies podcast. We have our first doctor trailer junkie.
Oh, there you go.
All right. Pressure's on.
You know, he's a doctor, but not the kind who helps people, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you're sick, don't come to me.
But we're junkies and we're not the kind that take drugs. So it's all right.
That's right. That's right.
There you go.
Unless movie trailers are drugs, then.
That's right.
So I guess we settled on The Art of Self-Defense.
Yes.
Yes.
Fantastic. We all watched the right one.
It's a teaser. It's a teaser trailer, but it has a lot of elements to it. So I think it had enough meat to it to discuss.
Oh, I think so too. Yeah. No, I was of concern that we were all going to watch a different trailer and then we're going to be like, I don't know, let's just go for it. Right.
That happened in the first month. I think we watched two different trailers. And as we were talking about Equalizer 2 with Denzel Washington, he was saying something about the trailer. I was like, that's not the trailer.
Yeah, we've since dialed in the proper trailers to get them and distribute them to each other so we know what we're watching, you know.
So who goes first this week? Jimmy, it's your birthday week, so you get to choose. You want me to go first or you go first? We'll let Todd follow.
I guess I could just start the conversation and then I'll let you guys like just go, you know, run.
Okay, cool.
Sounds good.
First thing, I'm guessing it's a dark comedy. Would you say that's what it is?
Yeah.
That's what it looks like to me.
The trailer's a dark comedy.
Yeah, it definitely looks that way to me. It's the balance of, yeah, the darkness and the comedy. Yeah.
And then second question, does it take place in Reseda? You know, I mean, where's Daniel Russo?
Yeah. Right.
I think the main comment I have is when he gives the rundown of all the reasons why he wants to do self-defense, because he's afraid of like the dark and he's afraid of other men and he's afraid of everything that goes on in his life. I think that's like, at some point, every guy has that insecurity and we're all just like, I don't know what to think. I'm just afraid of everything and everybody wants to like pick on me and... You know, and then like right. You want to go do self-defense or something.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know what you mean. I saw it in, you know, watching the trailer. It's interesting. I think it certainly has the darkness there to it. I mean, if you look at the kind of toward the latter part of it, there's a lot of quick clips and things in there. And certainly there's some clues in there, some things, you know, like him dragging a body, him holding a gun, things like that. So you can definitely tell it's going to kind of take this rather dark turn. And it's but I think, you know, in terms of casting, it seems to me like Jesse Eisenberg is a good choice, I think, for, I mean, just the kind of the look on his face and things like that in the trailer just kind of shows sort of this kind of a little bit socially awkward, just intimidated person. I think that, you know, carries a lot of weight and just sort of shows, you know, okay, what happens in when you have someone who's kind of more socially awkward and maybe they're kind of disenfranchised, and what happens in when they have a crisis and they've their personal lives where they really cause them to fear for their safety. And is, I assume, something, you know, early on, you know, really sets them off, I guess, and really makes them, you know, maybe even more intimidated or more afraid of things than he was maybe even at the beginning of the film, I'm guessing. But yeah, I think it'll be, you know, certainly interesting, I'm sure, about maybe some sort of growth that he'll have as a person as he takes on learning karate and embracing the discipline.
Yeah. No, I love the idea how, you know, it's at South by Southwest. That's where it opened. And it has the toxic masculinity, which is like a big in the zeitgeist. So it kind of hits this wheelhouse of topical conversation that's going on. It has the comedy of Eisenberg's delivery. And then on top of it, I think we're kind of searching for the other and the other that can be made fun of. So now in this sphere of the idea of toxic masculinity, it feels like it's a safe thing to poke fun at. You know, these bros that are walking around
mm-hmm.
like picking on people or the guy pulling out the samurai sword. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And that's kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah, I was thinking that, yeah, the masculinity thing, toxic masculinity, especially when, you know, in the very beginning where, you know, he's given his name, so that's a very feminine sounding name, you know. And thinking, okay, I could see this is going to be a theme, you know, throughout, you know, let's just, you know. Let's be manly.
And Todd, I think you hit it too when you talk about his growth throughout the movie. And they introduce, like at the end of the trailer, they introduce his belt. This is your belt. It's sacred. You lose it, it's $15.
Right.
I could see, like, as he starts attaining belts or as he starts growing in karate and the self-defense, the masculinity starts growing and maturing, and maybe he's less fearful. But I'm hoping there's, like, some sense of respect for his, you know, ability to fight or whatever. So he just doesn't go out and pick fights with just random people because he thinks he can now, you know?
Right. Hopefully not.
I love the idea, too, that when he asks him why he's taking the class, I think that's the genre conversation, because we, you know, when we started this conversation about the movie, we said it's a dark comedy. And I love the idea of thinking that, you know, when he asked that question of why you want to take karate, and he goes into the soliloquy of his real reason about, you know, being fearful of other men and all of this stuff. And it's this beautiful introspective moment. And yet his instructor, his master says, it's a multiple choice. You know, you have to pick from these, right. You know, and Eisenberg pushes back and Eisenberg pushes back, and he's like, well, it's a little more complicated than that. And yet the response is even like, do you want me to read them again? You know, like, right. You have to literally get in the box, you know? And I think that's, to me, that's the nod to the idea that this looks like a dark comedy, but hopefully it can go places where maybe you wouldn't expect. And I think the key to the cinematic experience that I've found, that I gravitate towards, that I've found through film Twitter, is the balance of fulfilling expectations with unexpected, what all surprises are, or surprising in a pleasant or at least a satisfactory way. Satisfactory surprises. So I like the juxtaposition of those two ideas, and as well as the thought that you have to have some balance in there of those two elements.
Yeah, and I also enjoyed the attention to detail, like with the glasses case. For some reason, they just focused on that glasses case as he put it it on the desk. He pulls his glasses out and then they just like get to it, you know, but whatever. I have a feeling the whole movie is going to be like those little pieces of detail that you pay attention to, and it just adds to the enrichment of the piece.
Mm-hmm. Anytime cinematically somebody focuses on glasses, I'm always drawn back to Lord of the Flies with Piggy and his glasses.
Ah, yeah.
And to me, this is, you know, when you think of Lord of the Flies and you think of the context of the toxic masculinity of all the movies throughout history, you know, Lord of the Flies is probably your quintessential toxic masculinity movie. So to focus on the glasses and the glasses in Lord of the Flies, how many papers did I read on Lord of the Flies? But it's a societal cue. It's a cue that the glasses are part of what happens in society when you are weak. When you're weak in society, society has a way to correct for your weakness, which is vision. And it's a very plain thing that you wear. I wear glasses on a daily basis, and I wear them because society has developed this correction for an ailment that I have, you know, a shortcoming that I have for vision. And I think that's one of the reasons I saw this as a showcase element of this film, to say like, hey, we're going to be funny. We're going to be, you know, thriller-esque, but maybe we have a little more to say. And in the trailer, we'll hit you as like a short story, and we'll hit you with the short film beats of taking the time to go into the glasses moment.
You said, I couldn't have said it better, Ted.
I couldn't have either.
Yeah. So how did your guys' beards finish?
Good, good. I mean, it was smooth all the way through for me.
It was smooth all the way through.
Yeah.
I love on IPAs, I do like when an IPA is this low on the, what is it? The spectrum, the 35
IBUs.
When it's this low on the IBUs, I actually like it warmer, which is maybe it's a strange thing to say.
Well, as it warms, it brings flavor out.
And I think with the low IBUs, the complexity is showcased a little more. So the last sip to me is always the best on a low IBU IPA.
Well, and that's why, like, when you look at a Coors Light and when it's cold enough, the mountains change colors or something. Because when it's warm, you don't want to taste it. Yeah, the colder it is, it like freezes your palate, so you can't taste anything. So let's get this thing ice.
Exactly.
I used to drink a lot of Arctic Ice and a lot of Ice House.
Ah, Ice House.
And when I would sit with a 30 case of Ice House on my porch with my best friend.
A 30 case.
I had a party house growing up, but when I would sit on the porch with my friend and, you know, we'd drink and, you know, throughout the afternoon, if you get half of the beer and it's been there for, you know, 15 minutes on a hot summer day, you just go back in the cooler and get a new one.
Oh, yeah.
It's not worth finishing that off.
Oh, it's rough finishing off. Yeah. I used to drink some Ice House back in the day too. And you definitely just throw it out and just start over again with the ice cold one.
Awful. Yeah.
But yeah, this was really good though. I enjoyed it. And I agree with you. I think actually the last few sips, I think I enjoyed it the most. I feel like I could taste the flavor the most actually.
Cool. So, and we kind of covered what we're watching in the beginning half. So I don't think we need to revisit that.
I got one thing. I got a review.
Uh-oh, here we go.
I pulled up on Podbeam. We also get reviews there. And 10 days ago, Ruiv, I don't know. He's listening to one of our older episodes. He was listening to our Infinity War episode. And as we always said, good or bad, we don't care. Just review us. Give us something. Give us some feedback. Even if it's negative, we'll read it.
There you go.
So here's one. And it says, man, you guys put out an Avengers podcast with one guy who's seen two movies and one guy who kept calling it Infinity Wars, plural. So I apologize. I think I called it Infinity Wars because the beer was really good that night. and like I said, you know, I was hoping maybe last week's podcast where I'm giving Game of Thrones some flack for being like Gone with the Wind, we'll get a negative review for that too. Yay.
I love it. Well, and that's the funny, you know, that's kind of the thing is like, I don't get into superhero movies, which is what got us started on this. What did we even call it? The TJP challenge?
The TJP MCU challenge.
MCU challenge. Yeah. So we finished Iron Man 3 okay. last night, like I said. Next, I don't even know what's coming, but whatever it is.
Did you like the Mandarin twist?
The Mandarin twist?
Where Mandarin's an actor hired by the other guy.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, it was okay. I mean... you know, I have to admit, though, we started it kind of late and I was tired. So I kind of woke up. I'm like, wait, where are we? What's going on? And Clarissa's filling me in, you know. And then I see a guy turn red. I'm like, why is he red? No, I mean, you know, I think the funny thing is, like, superhero movies are so prolific. I mean, they're always coming out. And,
right.
You know, to not be into them, but to be into other stuff, I think is okay. But it's like, I think so many listeners are into them, and they probably just roll their eyes every time they hear me talk.
Well, no, I mean, I think it speaks to archetypes. So, you know, every people has their own mythology. So through the Greeks and through the Romans, they had their mythologies, which we study in school now. And I think a common day mythology is something like this comic book world universe that they've created. But as the exact same thing, I think, you know, Game of Thrones has a very similar archetype model, mm-hmm. and the same interplay of characters. And it has a very, you know, mythology laced feel to both of those environments.
Yeah, definitely. Those kind of environments, I think, they're ripe for a lot of the archetypes, the classic archetypes that, you know, like Carl Jung came up with, or like Joseph Campbell.
Right. Oh, Joseph Campbell.
Yeah. He's great. My favorite. Hero's journey, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah. Power of myth.
So, Todd, what do you have on deck here? I think you said you have a study that you just finished, or you just collected the first 200 participants.
Sure.
Is that something you could talk about, or something? What are you working on right now? What's exciting you in your current work life?
Sure, sure. I could be happy to talk about that. If you want me to talk more about that 4-year study too, I can as well. So this study that we're doing is. Basically looking at advertising effectiveness, and we created an app, and we had an article in there and then basically we instruct everybody, okay, to take a look at the app, look at everything on the page, read the article, and you're going to answer questions on it. Of course, they didn't know that we were going to be testing the advertising, but what we did is essentially we had 7 different conditions, experimental conditions. One was a control group, but there was no ad. Then we had 3 and then we had 6 different other things. And we had one that was an ad that was shown in the very beginning. There was a still ad that could either be in the very beginning of the content or embedded halfway through. And then we had one that was animated mm-hmm. in the beginning or halfway through. And then we had a video ad that's like a short 10-second ad. It was the beginning or halfway through. So we're looking at things like attention to the ad, attitude toward the ad, recall, recognition of the ad, purchase intention, things like that. I mean, kind of looking at the preliminary numbers on it, there are a lot of different things. Preliminary numbers, we saw that the attitude toward the ad was, okay, mid-roll ads, not surprisingly, were the most irritating and intrusive. So we also looked at that. That was a big thing. Attention to the ad was highest in the video pre-roll of all those. The intrusiveness and irritation negatively correlated with purchase intention, as you might think. And then ad recall was correlated positively with ad attractiveness, brand attractiveness, uh-huh. mobile page attractiveness, brand value, and ad likes. Anyway. Yeah.
Did you use a real ad or did you make up an ad?
We made one up actually. We made one up. We had a fictional brand for, we called it Optimax. It was for a DSLR camera. And we came up with that. And actually I had students in my one class come up with video ads that we could use for that. So that was an assignment to have students create the ad. So.
Wow. You got them working on all sides. That's awesome.
Got to work on all sides. Exactly. Exactly. But anyway, but yeah, that was my last couple of weeks doing that. And of course, now we're down to try to write a paper and hopefully get it published and presented at a conference coming up. So
is it still publish or perish in universities?
It is. It really is. I mean, CSUN is, you know, because of the teaching load there, because we teach, you know, I'm doing 3 classes, but soon it'll be 4. I mean, we don't have the expectations of like a research one institution or something like that, like USC or somewhere like there. But mm-hmm. but we do have. But we are expected to publish. Yeah. Like if I don't, you know, I have to have a certain number of publications by tenure. If I don't, then, you know, I'm looking for a job somewhere else. So,
oh, wow.
You know, so wow. You do have that. And we also have expectations in terms of service. Like we're supposed to be involved. And of course there's all these university committees in the department, and then committees that we do, you know, in different industry organizations and stuff like that. So that's part of it as well. But the lion's share of what we do is, yeah, teaching and research. But of course, the most visible thing is the teaching part.
All right, gentlemen, I think we had a great episode, and I'm sitting here and I'm just like, you guys are talking and I'm just like laughing my head off because I reread that comment. I mean, that is my favorite comment I think we ever got. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. Oh, man. Infinity Wars. All right. We got to get out of here. Hey, Todd, it was a pleasure having you, man. It was great. I learned like so much about Nielsen and like just really seriously, all the research you've done and just all the stuff about, you know, just the media and the marketing business side of it and stuff more than just because, you know, if you think about it, there's an idea that somebody has and somehow it comes up, it pops up in my living room and we watch it. But like, there's so much that goes on in the production phase, but even more that goes on in the business and distribution phase. You know, I mean, it's unreal.
I know it is. It's, I mean, I love it. I just feel like, yeah, I love the fact that it's fast paced and changing. Of course, it means that, you know, research wise, there's always new ideas and things like that. But of course, teaching, it means constantly updating materials and updating my slide decks and all that kind of stuff. But it's fun. I've always loved this side of the business. I mean, when I got into the business, I came in and doing ad sales, and that's kind of my background professionally. And it's so I've always sort of gravitated to that side. I mean, I have an appreciation for the creative side and everything involved with the production part. But what really gets me excited is the marketing side and the distribution side, for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome.
Awesome. But I really appreciate the opportunity, guys. Jimmy, it's a pleasure to meet you virtually, at least here. And
yeah, for sure.
Hope to have the opportunity to meet you in person at some point. And Ted, it's, you know, great. I appreciate you inviting me on the program. And
oh yeah. No, thanks for coming.
Yeah, no problem. And I appreciate you coming out last fall for our Entertainment Industry Institute.
Oh yeah. That we gave that a shout out on the podcast and
oh good.
And it was definitely fun, a fun time. And willing great. To do it again and definitely would love to talk to some of your students.
That'd be great. Yeah, I'd love to have you come in, guest lecture anytime you'd like, and both of you, and certainly cool. If you want to come in, yeah, we'll do that Industry Institute again this coming fall, and I'll definitely be in touch with you about that. Love to have you back.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, Todd, well, hey, you have a good rest of your evening. I know it's getting a little bit late here.
You too.
All right, man, we'll talk to you later.
Thanks for having me.
All right, bye.
All right, take care, guys. Bye.
See you. Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.